Welcome to iConversation. I'm Laura Fantacci, co-founder of Wardrobe Icons, and today I'm joined by our features editor, Brooke Lefortrench, to talk to one of my good friends and early cover stars of the Icons update, Caroline Issa. The topic is influence, and there's no one better suited. She's chief executive and fashion director at Tank, and you may have spotted her in the odd street style photo too. I hope you enjoy our inspiring conversation. So I think I want to start with something that you probably don't know. Mm. When Petra and I started thinking about Wardrobe Icons, we came up with a dream list of all the women that one day we'd hope we'd have on the cover of Wardrobe Icons, I promise you. And obviously, you were very high up that list. So when we actually managed to, well, you agreed to be on the cover, aside from the fact that we were thrilled, it was a little like a little dream come true. Aww. But what I think you don't know is that it really made a difference for us. Like, I think, you know, that was issue number three.
Yeah, it was just early. It was like
2014.
God, 5 years ago.
It was
4 years ago.
Five in October.
That's insane. Yeah. Okay, yeah. That's amazing.
But people took notice. The industry took notice. Mm. Like you, I think involuntarily, you were probably one of the original, and you probably don't even like hearing this because you are just so incredibly nice, but you were like an original street style sensation. Photographers wanted to take pictures of you. Everyone wanted to know what you were wearing. Brands wanted to collaborate with you. You had a real influence, and certainly had an influence on what I wanted to wear, what Petra wanted to wear, and how we were thinking about clothes. So I wanted to ask you, how do you think that happened? Like, how did you find that in that position?
How the hell did that happen?
It was a real moment.
All right, that's a good question. And I, you know, trying to sort of look back on that moment, I think it was a series of very lucky happenstance. You know, it was all luck. There was no work to that. And I think I happened to be at the maelstrom, like, you know, right at the center of the storm of this sort of completely new way of discovering people through people like Tommy Tan, Scott, the sartorialist, Garance Doré, even Susie Bubble. You know, it was such an interesting time where all of a sudden, you know, I'd been in the industry for, gosh, like what, 10 years, 12 years already by then, going to the shows. And then all of a sudden you had this new way of discovering kind of people who were always had been in the back, kind of back behind the scenes, not at the forefront whatsoever. Yeah. And then all of a sudden you have all these, you know, I remember Tommy Tan's first ever blog, and it was just like vertical pictures of all the editors with Tommy's like encyclopedic knowledge of what you were wearing. A lot of us editors, you know, you were dressing up nicely, but it wasn't like revolutionary. Even the way to see Anna Della Russo changed from wearing all black yoji to kind of embracing that runway look. And it was a real celebration of fashion. And I think because of that, I think brands started taking notice, and it was just a different way of influencing, you know. I think like Diana Vreeland times, it was all about the socialite or like the top model. And you know, in our generation, in the last sort of 15 years, it's sort of become about just kind of
street style, real people.
Real people, you know, who love fashion and use it in a way to express themselves.
I think at that time when we interviewed, it was 2014, you were preparing to launch your collaboration, actually your collection that you designed with Nordstrom.
Yeah.
And the year before, in 2013, you'd done that amazing collaboration with
LK Bennett.
LK Bennett, which went viral, sold out. Yeah. I think I bought a pair and I sold them, and I'm still like regretting it. Why did I do that? It's not one in, one out. That's a stupid rule.
I get it.
But and then since then, you've done loads of collaborations. Mm. Sometimes it was your own design. Sometimes it was like a collaboration, you know, with the designer. Were collaborations something that you always wanted to do? How do you see that?
I had not at all. And you know, I think when LK Bennett came to me, they really took a chance because I was a fashion journalist, I was a fashion editor, I was a small business owner, and I didn't have, you know, nowadays you have to have millions of people on Instagram to do collaborations. I think not all the time, that's not true, but I do think that you know, they really took a chance. And I think there was something around a perspective that they saw. And I think when I launched my LK Bennett shoes, I was so happy because I had been able to really express sort of this very fun, colorful. And I remember just, you know, feeling very grateful and very honored that they would ask me. And the fact that it did really well was really nice. And then the fact that Nordstrom kind of came to me again very early. And since me, they kind of used me as a really interesting, or didn't use me, but we both sort of learned as a test case, like how you can work with non-traditional creatives, non-traditional designers. You know, I'd never gone to fashion school and never sketched in my life. But it's interesting to see how collaborations work with sort of experts in fashion brands and production and shoe brands, with people who do not come from traditional places. Yeah, yeah. And I love that.
I love that. I've done a couple of collaborations and love the fact that you can also, you know, dip into something that you don't necessarily like know much about. And then, so I did like a jewelry one and I did another one with Ottenberg, which I really loved doing. But then you could go into shoes or you could do knitwear.
Yeah.
It's fun and it's, I feel like it's very satisfying.
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of like scratches that creative itch that we have.
Yeah, and you don't have to be an expert. You can rely on your own creative instinct, but then rely on the person that you're working with.
Who
to actually know what they're doing.
Yes, yeah. And can kind of temper you and create something really beautiful. Yeah. But I think for us to be able to have that opportunity is quite an amazing thing.
My turn now. I'm going to go right back to the beginning. Could you tell us a little bit about where you grew up? Is that a Canadian accent?
It's a Canadian neutral accent, yes.
Yeah, it's a Canadian accent. And what were you like as a kid? Were there any signs of the woman you are today growing up? Mm. Like, I'd love to know.
It's a good question. I grew up in Montreal in Canada. I grew up in a very open and diverse family environment. My father is Lebanese-Iranian. My mother was Chinese. And Canada is a real melting pot. And I'm so grateful to have grown up in Canada. And a place like Montreal, which is a French city, so you grew up speaking French at school. Come home, you're sort of speaking in an English environment. So it was a wonderful place. And I think, one, it gave me a very open view, plus the fact that I was traveling a lot as a kid because I got to see my parents' cultures and their homes. But I think my parents really kind of instilled in me a very hard work ethic. You know, my parents were first-generation immigrants.
So you watched them work really hard?
Completely, to build their own small business. They were entrepreneurs in their own right. And, you know, they had no family in Canada. And it was quite incredible. And I think seeing that, you know, they always demanded very high standards. And I'm sure, like, we're all very much high achievers in this room. So you guys would understand. And I think the thing that really, you know, I always loved fashion. My dad, weirdly, is like the one who really loved fashion. He used to sew his own clothes. Like, he was
really?
A total.
That's so interesting.
I know. So interesting. My mom was kind of used clothes less. Maybe she was more into jewelry. But my father, I think, really influenced me in the fashion world. And then, like, as a teenager, they allowed me to sort of, I don't know, I discovered like a Harper's Bazaar, Liz Tilberis era Harper's Bazaar. And they really let me go to town with magazines. And then I was scouted when I was like 14 on a Montreal subway. And they were very strict. They were like, only if you get straight A's are you allowed to ever take any days off for modeling.
Did they understand what did they think about, and what did you think about modeling? And did
they were terrified. And I was like, woohoo, somebody thinks I'm beautiful, you know. And as a young teenager, I'm so sad for my young teenage self that I had to kind of use that as a confidence booster. But I think the ironic thing is that what I learned through my modeling experiences, I spent a month and a half in Milan when I was 16.
Young.
Wow. And the fact that my parents let me, but I learned so much about myself, about how I was a terrible model, how I actually felt very, I think, again, I felt like I'd seen so many young women around me who either had suffered too much around eating disorders or scuzzy men. And I became a real feminist that summer. And I came back and I told my agent that that was it. I was done and I wanted to go to college and study business. And
that's amazing. So at that point, what did you want to be as a grown up? Because how old were you? 16, 17?
16, 17. I think I quit when I was 17 and actually already applied to McGill in Canada. And I thought that's where I was going to go. I was going to stay in Montreal. And then I discovered this amazing business school called Wharton. In the States, and I knew nothing about the American university system. I took the last set of SATs and scraped through. And I think because I remember my college application, one of the questions was like, write page 246 of your autobiography. I love that question.
Wow.
And I wrote about my like one day of modeling when I was in Rome for Alta Moda back then, where I met Mr. Armani for the first time. And I think they were like, this girl has got the weirdest background. Let's get her in. You know, let's mix it up amongst all the business nerds. And I got in. And my first day on campus was the first day my parents dropped me off at university. You know, we had never even gone to the university to check it out. I mean, most people do like college trips. And no, I just showed up. Which is, I think, another reason why they really just trusted me to kind of be put into a situation and get on with it and learn and adapt. And I think they've really, that in my childhood is something that they've always let me learn to do and have always had confidence that I could do. And therefore, I think to this day, you just put me somewhere. I don't mind being by myself, or I don't mind being in a room full of people that I have no idea who they are, but I'll figure it out.
Do you think part of what didn't appeal to you about modeling, aside from all the things you witnessed, the dynamics, was that you weren't really in control of your destiny? You sound like someone who really wanted to, with entrepreneurial parents who really were at the helm. And most people will never own their own businesses. And you grew up with parents who did. Do you think that was part of where that ambition came from?
Mm-hmm. I think it was most of it, to be honest. I had sworn to myself that if I ever went back into fashion, I wanted to be on the side that actually got to make the decisions.
Yes.
Yeah. So when I joined Tank, which was a very small indie magazine, which it still is today, but 17 years ago, I was kind of very aware that I wanted to make sure that our models were treated really well on shoots, that we worked with good, nice people who were honest. You know, I think it's led me to run my fashion publishing business in a way that I had experienced and knew what I wanted to be as a woman in business in fashion, and the values that I wanted to make sure that, you know, we as a business could make sure that we upheld. So absolutely, like that month and a half in Milan taught me so much, and I'm so grateful to it. And it's definitely, you know, but I am a control freak, yes.
No, I wouldn't say that.
Well, yes, definitely.
No, but yes, we all are. Okay,
yes,
we all are.
Yeah, yeah. I know, definitely.
We're all nodding to one another.
Laura is,
the thing about women in business, in fashion, I'd be really interested to know who has influenced you and whether there are any role models that you saw, because you were sort of blazing a trail. Fashion, while created for women, is often owned and driven by men, or it has been in the past. That is changing. But where did you see a path, and were there any women who really influenced you?
You know, when I was 16, my mom actually gave me a book by Anita Roddick, who was the founder of The Body Shop, and really like a pioneer in organic beauty, in socially driven business. And I was like, oh, she is my queen. And I tore out like every poster that I could find of her, or like printed off or tore out magazine pages, and just put her around my room as sort of like just my ideal entrepreneur, somebody who worked in the beauty business, but who could also have an incredible approach to business. And then I think as I got older and I became a management consultant when I graduated, and through my old boss, I met, when I moved to London 17 years ago, I met a woman who used to be, who was the first CEO at Harrods. Her name is Marty Wickstrom. And she had been at Nordstrom, and she's a real retail guru. And I really kind of forced her to become an early mentor of mine. And then I think later, you know, somebody that both Laura and I love is Jenna Lyons.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think sort of her persistence, her vision, her delicate balance between collaboration but like pure vision, I think is somebody, she's somebody that I still to this day kind of miss, adore, can't wait for her new project to come out, you know. And I think it's just one of those things where we tend to sort of gravitate to the women who inspire us the most. And for me, I think it's been kind of CEOs, female CEOs, marketing directors, creative directors. And those are the kind of women that really like inspire and push me forward.
How do you deal with the flip side of that? Because I imagine for everyone who wants to lift you up, there are people who might be intimidated by your ambition.
I think I'm a naturally optimistic person. And I think that I have a weird innate ability to not deal with those kind of people. So I avoid those kind of people, I think. And therefore, in my life, I've never had to deal with people who kind of wish you ill will or are jealous. Or I've only really surrounded myself or said yes or worked with people who I think are extremely collaborative, that want, that see that there's value in everyone's success rather than having to tear people down.
That's an inspiring way of seeing it.
You can recruit well. I mean, there's also something about weeding out the people that you really want to work
Absolutely. And I think
Lara's good at that.
Yeah.
Says someone she employed.
We like that perspective.
But I think that with social media, though, it's sometimes hard to avoid the negativity because it just comes to you. You can't really, or you can filter it. But so I think that brings me to my next question, because obviously when with influence come the subject of social media. And I know, I remember you telling me, I'm not someone that will ever take a selfie. You're not, you said that.
Yeah.
Is that still the case? How do you use social media? How do you feel about it?
You know, I am very grateful to social media. I think social media has so many positives in the sense of what an incredible platform to share what we do with audiences. I've made friends through, you know, social media around the world. I went to China last summer and this young woman reached out to me, and then I had tea with her the next time I went to, you know, China again. And it was just amazing how it makes the world so much smaller. I think on the flip side, there is no doubt that social media can alter your mood in a very fast way, in a very negative way. And I think you have to be so self-conscious to take yourself out of that, like, kind of rabbit hole of FOMO of, oh, why does she look so great and everything? Why is that person's life look so exciting and I don't get to do half of those things? You know, you have to be so self-disciplined. It's almost like being an expert in yoga. I think, you know, we all have to learn to remove ourselves from the filter of social media. And I think now with the algorithm too, like, it's such a dangerous place to put self-worth in. And I think in the same way that my mom always used to say, like, you know, never put self-worth in how you look, because that is something that as you get older, if something happens, like, that's not where your self-worth lies.
So when you post a picture, you go, okay, I'm going to post that.
Yeah.
What's the thought behind it? Do you have something that that makes you go post? Like, is there something at the back of your mind?
Do you know, yes, I think I get to travel a lot, so there's beautiful places. But I think recently I want to share people and brands and concepts that are really inspiring or that I feel people should know about. So I think, you know, there's a lot of young brands or interesting people, and it's so funny, and I post it going, God, everybody must know about this.
Yes,
and then the posts get like 200 likes, you know, and you're like, what? This is insane. But then you have to realize that, you know, we all put content out there, and this content, especially on an Instagram channel, is definitely being controlled by a greater decision maker. But, you know, I can tell you that if I put only selfies, I would probably get a hell of a lot more likes and a lot more follows from strange men around the world, you know, but that's just not what I'm into.
Yeah.
And I don't care if I have 10 followers, but all my 10 followers actually are engaged
into what you are
into what you do. And that's why I think what Wardrobe Icons does so, so well is that you have cultivated a community who are so engaged and so trusting. And I think that right now for me as a media owner is the thing that is my biggest priority, is how do I make sure that my community, you know, is interested in sharing and like fully immersed and bought into the things that I am sharing.
Oh, I agree with that. I think that not messing around with that trust is really important, and making sure that anything you say feels really true. We ask ourselves that question at Wardrobe Icons all the time, even if it means more work, even if it means changing a page, or why is it relevant? Yeah. What does it mean to our reader? Yeah. Do we, would we buy it? Is it, you know, is it important to us? And always going back to the philosophy of helping women.
Yeah.
Buy more intelligently, with longevity and with sustainably as well these days.
Yeah. And I think with influence comes trust. And I think trust is not a word that, you know, it's starting to be bandying about a lot more with privacy laws and privacy issues. But I think trust and what your sort of reader and community and Instagram audience want is they want to make sure that you don't break that trust.
I love that.
You
know? I love the idea of influence being based on trust.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think therefore that naturally gives us a guideline as to the kind of brands we want to work with, the kinds of people we want to work with. It goes back to that question of like avoiding those that you don't. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, so many of us could do that like pay for play post. And I decided a long time ago that was not how I wanted to have my profession kind of defined, I guess.
I have a question for both of you as founders, as female founders of businesses, and two women who have influence. What's your advice? I know you do, Laura, and you must have young women or women asking you for advice all the time. What is your advice to people who see the path you've blazed and sort of want to do something similar?
I mean, mine are pretty classic. Mine is like work really, really hard, be really, really curious, and know that if you're going to run your own business, cash flow is king.
Equity.
Yes. So, you know, I think those things can hold anybody in great stead. But and I've said this a lot, but my mom gave me a book called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. And I think those words have really constantly been a mantra, because I've gotten into so many situations where I don't know what I'm doing. Really, I'm not an expert in the area that they have asked me. I'm not a designer, I'm not a shoe designer, I'm not a clothes designer, I'm not a jewelry designer, whatever it is. And yet, that's the only way we learn and grow as humans. So I think, as entrepreneurs and as female founders, it's about having the confidence to say, I don't know exactly what that entails, but I'm going to try, and I believe that I can actually do a really great job at it. And that's how I would do it. What would you say?
I would say, I hear a lot of women asking me, oh, I want to work in fashion. I want to do something. And it often feels like they don't really know who they're speaking to. Mm. So my first advice is always, who is your audience? What do you feel passionate about? What do you feel like you can give a community? You know, find that within you and be really passionate about the subject or the ethos or the philosophy behind the core of your business and stick to that.
That's because a great piece
if
of
you
advice.
Fall out of love of what, you know, what is at the center of your business, I feel like it just, people feel that and it's not inspiring.
Yeah.
So for me, it is also surrounding yourself with people that you think better you. I feel like I'm an expert in my field, but it's so important to surround yourself and your business with people that you feel are better than you at something.
Yeah.
And I'm constantly inspired with that. And I feel very lucky at Wardrobe Icons to have, you know, Petro, that is like, you know, like a sister, like and the best business partner I could ever wish for, both from a you know, a personal point of view and a business point of view. And I've got other members of the team, one of them sitting here, who I feel very lucky to have.
Brooke. Yeah. Yes.
But I think that's really important.
That's so
like
key.
Having, you know, people that inspire you. And then I think it's also about hard work. And I think, you know, 5 years in, I thought it would be a lot easier.
Did you?
Yeah. And I remember quitting my job at Red and sending an email to all my family and friends. They still have it. And it's ridiculous. I read it earlier in the year. It said, "Dear family and friends, I have decided to quit my job at Red because I want to be a better mom and a better sister and a better friend and a better whatever. And so I'm going to start my business."
Oh.
And probably a lot of those,
they were like, does she realize it's going to take over her life? But you know what? I bet you are a better sister, a better friend, a better mother.
I'm really not.
I don't know.
I feel like I'm juggling all of it. Probably, like, I thought I thought I'd have all this time.
Yeah. But I think time versus happiness, because we never get more time, but we can definitely get more happy. And I think you definitely, you look more fulfilled, you are more fulfilled.
Yes, yeah.
And that fulfillment, I think, makes you a better everything.
I want to hang on to that thought.
So we've learned a lot about you in this interview.
Oh, that's good.
And I think the most interesting thing for us is the way that influence and trust really dovetail. And so I'm wondering, you've achieved probably some of the milestones you set out when you were younger. And now looking ahead, what are some of the ways you ultimately would like your influence to play out?
What's next?
Cameron is the sphere.
I think there's so many interesting things happening in our industry these days. I think conversations around diversity, inclusivity, size, sex, race, I mean, you name it, we are finally kind of all talking about it. And I think it's a really interesting time. With all of that, being in a position where I have a platform, whether that's through social media, through my magazines, I do think about legacy, and it's a big, big word.
Ooh, yes.
Yeah. But I do think, God, if, you know, when I'm long gone from this planet, you know, what is it that I hope to kind of leave behind? Like, what is it that Caroline Issa did what? And I'm still figuring that out. I don't have the answer to that. But I do hope that it was that, you know, she was a kind and generous collaborator, and that I was able to give a platform to young, new, mm-hmm. different voices mm-hmm. that are not normally given a platform. And I think the thing that I'm proudest about Tank, not only that it's lasted 21 years in a print, you know, independent publishing scene, but also that it's throughout its history from day one, it's given incredible pages and voice to so many artists and photographers and writers and philosophers and politicians who are not normally covered in mainstream media, who mm-hmm. have gone on to do incredible things. And I think being in a place where we can share the people that we discover through our own curiosity, having been journalists, you know, I think that's, for me, like what I would love to continue doing and even step up and making sure that my community is constantly knowing that they can come to Tank for different and diverse voices that they don't normally find elsewhere.
You've always inspired us, and we're very proud to have had you as icon number 3.
Yay!
Preceded only by Jenna.
I know. Hello.
And Ava Itzigova.
I mean, not a bad lineup.
Not a bad lineup. And I think you would have probably been number one or number two.
I'm very honored. No. I mean, the fact that I'm even in that lineup along your illustrious 4.5 years worth of covers is an incredible honor to me. And I don't take that lightly. And I think that, you know, how amazing to be next to those two women, third in line, and then thereafter all the other women who came after us. But no, I'm very grateful and I'm very honored to have been a Wardrobe Icon cover star.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to iConversations. Turns out, talking never goes out of fashion. You can find more episodes of these insightful conversations with the women who inspire us on Apple Podcast. Please rate, review, and subscribe. It really helps get the word out.